The title for our show, An Inexact Science. Yeah, we're going to talk about the NFL draft. And every time people think they know, they really don't know. And so that'll be the main part of our cipher that we'll hit within the next 15 minutes of the show. But before we get started, we want to remind you all to go to www.realsportsguys.com for all things RSG. Connect with us on social media and get the connection there. We have videos that we've posted on our previous podcasts, as well as some audio podcasts and some blogs. We got some new stuff from Inside the Park. Hank got out there. We got some stuff from boxing, a boxing moment with myself and Darnell talking boxing. So there's plenty of stuff up there. Make sure you go to realsportsguys.com and check us out. And if you can send us give us a rating, we love those high ratings, fives, and some great comments that can help us improve as we keep on going. Before I get into the open mic, I want to bring in my co-hosts. These guys, we've been running together here for a while and making it happen. And so we'll start with the youngin', my man Darnell Kirkland. How you doing, Darnell? How you doing today?
Well, first of all, I have to remind you guys that I got last Saturday, I got conned by Amir once again. I wasted my $70 to see this guy quit. But and also we saw yesterday how Oklahoma City Thunder, one of the lowest IQ basketball teams I've ever seen in life. How you guys blow a 12-point lead in 3 minutes?
We will get into that. We will get into both those topics here in the open mic. You have seasons, you have teased, you have got us ready. Before we get into those topics, I'm gonna bring my man in. He's a veteran. He's the one that holds together so we don't lose a 12-point lead. My man Hank Davis.
No, sir, we're not going to lose no 12-point lead. It's good to be with you all tonight. And I can promise you this, everything on this show and everything going forward will be absolutely unredacted.
That's definitely happening here. We are not having anything redacted here. You're going to get the full transcript.
That's right.
They would let us get away with that anyway. All right. Well, if you haven't listened to RSG One Mic, we have some signature segments. Our opening segment is called One Mic, and then the cipher is kind of the heart of our topic for the show. And then our man Hank, he drops the mic for us at the end of the show to kind of close it out with a word of wisdom. And so we're glad you could be here with us and hanging with us at the show. But we're gonna go into the open mic. The youngin' teased a little bit. You know, if you listen to RSG for a while on all our platforms, boxing finds its way into our conversation. It's kind of been this constant thing. We've kind of kept boxing alive even before all these streaming lines and everything coming on. We were always talking boxing. And now boxing's kind of rising, getting hot again in the game. And so we had this major fight, pay-per-view, Crawford against Mir Khan, Bud Crawford, fighting for the Terrence Bud Crawford, fighting for the pound for pound. And we had a weird ending. It was definitely a low blow for those who didn't see the fight. You know, if you taped it, then this is your opportunity to pause this or move forward, come back, and we can tell you. But Crawford was coming on strong. They had a little exchange. He hit him low, but it looked like he hit him more on the hip rather than in the midsection. And the way that Khan did it, Amir Khan was in the corner looking to his corner person who kept asking him whether or not he was okay. He didn't really answer. And then they stopped the fight. And so it was kind of a weird ending, but it was obvious that Crawford was beginning to really assert himself in the fight. You know, Darnell's our resident boxing guy. You obviously, I have not taught you in the game as a media person, so I have to give you some insight so you don't invest in the way you invested. But we'll talk about that later. But you did invest. And in some ways, you know, it felt like the kind of fight you could invest in, because even if Amir Khan was going to lose, he usually loses in a spectacular fashion. You know, he fought, he went hard at Canelo only to get caught by a bolo and fell out, but he went hard, right? And so why did you begin to make the statement? Like, when you talk about that fight, it obviously left a bad taste in your mouth, but, you know, give me your perspective on it.
Well, before I get into anything, I have something to play for you.
I seen Amir Khan's face, and he was shaking his head, and I was getting disappointed the whole time because I knew that he was looking for a way out. Him and Virgil was having a conversation. I don't know what the conversation was about, but Amir just kept shaking his head, and I was like, oh, man, he about to quit. And I was right. That's what happened. Not the way that I would like to finish the fight, but, you know, Verge is in his corner for a reason. That's to look at there for his fighter, and he felt the need that his fighter didn't want to fight anymore, so he stopped the fight.
All right, so this is part two coming right here. I'm going to get the time stamp right.
Question for Amir. Amir, can you tell us what happened there at the end? Was it you who said you didn't want to continue, or did Virgil say it for you? What happened there?
Virgil, he was in the, I was in the corner, and obviously I walked over to him and said, how you feel? I said, who am I talking to? I'm sorry. And obviously I could feel it in my stomach. I was caught with good shots in the fight, obviously. I just didn't recover from that last shot. But wish, not take anything away from Crawford. He put on a great fight. And I mean, you know, it was a pleasure to be in the ring with him. I mean, he's a great fighter. And obviously a lot of people, I give him a lot more credit now than, you know, now I've spent the ring, time in the ring with him. He's a very good fighter.
Okay. Straight up, because I put it on my side. Listen, people are getting hit down there, but people are saying Amir quit. Could you speak to the people that say that and just direct it to them?
Yeah, I would never quit. I'd rather get knocked out. You know, I'm one of them fighters. I'd rather get knocked out. And in fights, I have been knocked out because I've tried to win fights.
You didn't quit.
No, I didn't quit.
So what happened?
Quit. I'm telling you, I never quit.
What happened?
I mean, I think I was
in the
All right, fellas. So that's what I wanted y'all to hear. You didn't quit.
So what's your conclusion? You're the analyst. What's your conclusion?
You didn't quit. Right.
So what do you think?
My conclusion for this whole, I was kind of, it was a little hyperbole when I said I wasted the money on the card.
Amir Khan doesn't have a history of quitting. Right, I've never seen him quit before, so why would you say he quit?
Cause we saw him quit. We watched him quit. We saw him go to the corner and say, Virgil Hunter asked him, do you want to continue? He looked at him and said, oh. He looked at him. And said, we watched him quit, but my reasoning why it wasn't a waste was because half the reason I bought the pay-per-view was for the undercard, because I wanted to see Shakur Stevenson and Teofimo, see what they were going to do. And Shakur Stevenson proved to us why he is worth the hype that he is given. But getting back into Amir Khan, you mentioned earlier the fight with Canelo. And this is actually going to go towards Terrence Crawford. This proved why Terrence Crawford is the best boxer on earth today. Because everybody always trying to say, Amir Khan has never been outboxed. Well, he got outboxed Saturday. There was no second of any round that Amir Khan won in that fight. Unlike the Canelo fight, when he was kind of being boxed in the beginning of the fight, and then Canelo had to catch up to him later. Terrence Crawford had him from the very beginning, and that proves the boxing skill and the boxing acumen of Terrence Crawford and his team.
So where does Terrence Crawford go now? I mean, he's kind of he's got the deal with Top Rank and then, ESPN.
Well, his fight is probably going to be against Kell Brook, because Kell Brook came and he said before the fight he was going to scout the fight. He was going to see look at Amir Khan, and he wanted to fight Crawford. And everybody wants to see Errol Spence versus Terrence Crawford. And the PBC side, Al Haymon and Errol Spence, well, in my opinion, because Bob Arum, the other clip that I didn't play was Bob Arum after the fight. He was saying, Al Haymon, he doesn't want any of his fighters to go against us. But I have a question for you. Who represents Amir Khan?
Who you tell me who represents him? I know
Amir Khan is an Al Haymon fighter. You literally just watched the fight with an Al Heyman fight.
There you go. I don't think Al Heyman, I think the problem that they have with this, Hank, I'll bring you in if you had a chance to see the fight. I think the problem that they have with this is that, and I think Ellerbe said it best. I watched a video of Ellerbe talking about this, is that Aram is coming out of this old school way of thinking about promoting that is kind of like this us against them mentality. Al Heyman is about making sure the boxers get paid and we can figure out the money. Like, he's not going to be out front yelling like, a lot of these historical promoters. He's a businessman. He ran Michael Jackson's tour. You know what I'm saying? Al Heyman went to business school at Penn. You know, Al ain't trying to get out here. Al ain't going to be in front of the camera. Al don't do business in front of the camera. He's just going to try to make sure the numbers add up. Everybody go. He tried to come up with a win-win scenario. And that's how Al Heyman, I think, has always worked, where there's enough money for everybody to make money. Whereas Bob Arum has always got to, I think it's a clash between generations of boxers. This is new school streaming that I've been saying. I was saying that when Doug came on. It creates a revenue model that allows for the money to be made over even more time than the pay-per-view. The shelf life of the streaming adds so much more value to the money than, and Al understands that. And so I didn't know what Bob Arum was talking about.
Okay, so where I was going with that beforehand was, I don't think it was it's Al Heyman stopping the fight, because we just saw an Al Heyman fighter and a top ring fighter, and we have been seeing Al Heyman fighters and top ring fighters working for years.
Yeah,
it's Errol Spence. I know I've been protecting Errol Spence for a long time, because that's
what here you go. Now you know what I'm saying. Now I got to hold on. Listen, before you do this, I got to give Young credit. He was one of the first people to unpack Triple G when at the height where everybody was talking about Triple G. You were the counter voice, and in some ways, you've proven it. And now you got an Errol Spence. Now this might be blasphemy. I got to hear your Errol Spence thing.
You know I love Errol Spence, but at the end of the day, Errol Spence said it to his face. He told Terrence Crawford to his face, "Why would I fight you when I could get the easy fight? I can get the easy belt fighting Sean Porter. So I got to keep it all the way 100. So Terrence Crawford said he wants to fight now. And the reason we're not getting the fight is not because of Terrence Crawford. It's not because of Al Heyman. It's because of Errol Spence. I got to keep it 100. It's on him. He wants to fight Sean Porter instead. After that, he's probably going to try to fight Keith Thurman instead. After that, he's probably going to try to fight Manny Pacquiao instead. So the bad news is we're probably not going to get Terrence Crawford fight for a good year and a half, because, like he said earlier, he's like, "Oh, Terrence Crawford's on the wrong side of the street, and I got to keep 100. Those are duck tactics. Duck tactics.
Oh, my goodness. All right, Hank, I don't know if you had a chance to catch the fight or not.
I didn't get a chance to catch the fight, but there's only one reason why I didn't, because unlike the youngin', I wasn't going to invest. Okay, now here's the thing. I want to see this fight, too, and I will see it, you know, in a couple of weeks. But one thing that I was shocked at with this fight, the night of the fight, and they were showing a lot of the undercard of bouts on ESPN. I don't know if you had an opportunity to see a couple of those down there. But the fact is, the fight itself, you know, in some markets was upwards of $75, which I was kind of shocked at, you know, for this fight, you know. And so I was kind of like taken aback by why they charging so much for this fight right here. You see what I'm saying? Yeah. So I was surprised about the amount too.
I thought it should have been a fight in the 40s or 50s, because exactly. It wasn't worth $70.
I want to see it, but it was
borderline not a pay-per-view fight.
It didn't sell well either. What I'm hearing is it was it only did about 100,000 pay-per-view wise. That's like a fourth of what Errol Spence did.
Which again didn't make a whole lot of sense to me when a lot of the boxing pundits was really predicting that Crawford was going to win this fight rather handily. Okay, a lot of people had picked Crawford to win this fight by a TKO or by a knockout in the later rounds. Okay, I don't even think anybody actually had Khan, you know, winning this fight, but they thought that he could probably every fighter has a puncher's chance.
Yeah, he's not a puncher.
you got to punch him, but you got to punch him. And the thing is, and they said, if he's going to get him, he's got to get him early because Crawford starts so slow. All right. But none of that happened. But I still was surprised at how much this fight cost. All right.
And I think part of the business model on this for ESPN, if you looked at their advertising for a lot of these folks, because with the fight, you also got the year subscription to their ESPN Plus. So they were baking that in because the residual money is on continuing the subscription model. So the reason why they put that, if you notice that for people who didn't already have ESPN Plus, that was built in as part of, they also got that year-long subscription. So it was designed to drive the streaming. So that's a different business model than right. the normal, the typical pay-per-view model where you're trying to take, because usually pay-per-view is a one-time thing you're going to make. What right. they're trying to do is a percentage of those folks are going to renew their subscriptions, right? So the money goes out. So people might say it's 100,000, but if 60,000 of those folks continue their subscriptions for the next 5 years, that money's made over and over again. I think if you look at their model, now they're experimenting with it, but you're right. I wouldn't have, this was a borderline pay-per-view. And given that model, you probably should have been more in the 50 range. Right. So that's the part where I think there's some disconnect, because part of it's not about Crawford. It's like Khan, if this was Khan before he fought Canelo, then that money might have been driven by that. But the last image people really have of Khan is taking that devastating knockout from Canelo in their mind, like that they saw. So I think you hit a really good point on that.
Before we move on, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
What do you think about Shakur Stevenson's performance Saturday?
I thought it was good, but I still think, as I mean, you were going back and forth, I still think that he is a year or two away, which you and I have talked about, from really getting in there and being what I think he could be. I think bringing him along the right way, he's going to have a lot of staying power. He's a great fighter. We cannot fight that. But I think that he's still a year away from, or two, from where we want him to be for staying power. Now, he's talented enough to get a really good fight right now. Like, his next fight could be with one of the top level, and he'll hold himself. But if you really want to set him up for long-term success, and I think, you know, that's what he has, in terms of, you know, having a team that, like Andre Ward and those folks around here who understand that, then he's going to have a lot of staying power. He's definitely a talented kid. He likes to talk. He's got the mouth. He's got the charisma. You know, he's going to be pay-per-view giant here soon. So I have no question. And he's tough. He just got stabbed from streets. And so part of this is not about his fighting. It's about him understanding his behavior outside, because he's already got this issue he got with this assault with his family in his video. So that's the stuff they got to correct, or he's not going to have staying power. So
About that. Yep. They showed the screenshot. I think I'm pretty sure you saw this. They showed the screenshot before he fought. Yep. Why did they do that for Kovalev?
We already understand that. And also, Kovalev is on the backside of his career. This is a rising star.
No, I'm saying before the fight, they put his rap sheet up there. They were saying, oh, he got arrested on this date. He got charged on this date. He has a trial on this date. Why did they do that for Sergey Kovalev?
Because that story was relevant at this point. Kovalev was not really relevant. Like, we could do a rap sheet for every boxer. Like, I'm not saying boxers in general, but we have boxers who have rap sheets. So we could have that throughout, and for all the reasons you're saying, but you could also say this was on ESPN, this is what they do. So Kovalev.
Both on ESPN. Kovalev last fight was on
Kovalev,
ESPN.
Who is Kovalev right now?
I'm saying.
I like Kovalev, but who is he?
They didn't expose that on Kovalev. They was over here.
Andre Ward took that. There's no need for that because Andre Ward took his heart. They didn't have to put the rap sheet up. You and I talked about this. I don't understand it yet. We could make all the speculation we want about this.
Okay.
But Kovalev is not a dynamic personality like this kid. Like, this kid's personality brings that kind of attention. Kovalev is not that kind of dynamic personality. Like, this guy got Pepsi commercials on his feature. Kovalev ain't that. Kovalev doing Hennessy.
So you said he got Pepsi commercials and stuff in his future. What? Then why would you expose for the world to see that?
Because At the time that Kovalev fought on ESPN, ESPN wasn't this far along in their infrastructure around boxing. Look how many people they deployed. Kovalev infrastructure around like, this. Their news agency.
Kovalev fought three or four months ago. He didn't fight. It's not like Kovalev.
But Kovalev's not a. He's not a story. Kovalev's not a story, man. Come on. Let's talk about it. He's not a story. Like, Kovalev's not a story. Now, he could come on soon. He's not a story. Who watched that fight? You and about nine other people from the Eastern Bloc. Come on to the next topic.
okay. I bet if Lomachenko was to get caught fighting somebody on the street, they wouldn't put that on there.
They probably wouldn't put it on there. But Andre Ward is on there. Andre can deal with that. I'm not gonna take that down. We'll get to that. You know how I feel about it, and I could comment on it. But
you know how I feel about it.
The only part about this is that. You got to give me
Ruben Foster, but they won't blow up that kicker that was on the New York Giants.
You got me on a whole nother thing. You taking me off my spot right now, youngin. I'm going to say this. You making a good case.
I'm sorry, we got on the.
But Kovalev can't be your case. Now Lomachenko is a good case, but Kovalev is B-side. This young man, A-side. It's like you asking, well, why are they talking about the Backstreet Boys? They ain't relevant.
I'm saying when the Backstreet Boys was on there, never mind.
We'll leave it alone. All right. Now that we heated, we got another rivalry that wasn't really a rival. This was the most dynamic 4-1 series I've ever watched. It felt like it was a game seven. Dame Dalla waved. I took the neighborhood out. Man, after being pushed out 2 years in a row, Dame Dalla stayed the course. And he dropped 50 on him in game five and sent OKC home. I'll go with you, Hank. What does this mean for Damian Lillard? Like, what does this put him, you know, on this stage with this dramatic performance he had sending the OKC Thunder home?
We saw this coming, okay? We saw this coming 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay. If you recall the series, in the first round series between Golden State and Portland, Damian Lillard clowned that game too. Okay. Yep. And we thought that this was the next up and coming championship team. Remember that? Mm-hmm. And nobody. This is to me. It's like this is what we expected and anticipated from Damian Lillard. All right. So the fact that happened. To me, it's like tick tock, where you been, brother? You know, because this is what I was looking for. This is what I was expecting from this Portland team. Okay. And so we got it. And what I think the rest of the nation saw was a young man that one of those hidden superstars. Okay. Wherever you got all the other big names, but this is one of them hidden superstars that's been getting it in. And they saw it when he shot that shot from my living room, okay, here in Michigan. All right, and hit nothing but the bottom of the net. All right, I had no dog in the fight, but you know how we do, D. Back in the day, when you see some stuff like that, you get up and run around your house. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Run around your house when you got ice water in your veins, and I mean, you know, he was relaxed. It was a pretty shot, and I mean, he had to be what, 10 feet behind the 3-point arc. And let that sucker go, and it fell with authority. And like you said, that is what you call, that is the quintessential dagger right there. You know, first of all, that game was very exciting to watch. It was very entertaining to watch. And for it to come down to that, that was an amazing, amazing, amazing finish. And you're right. Yeah. I think you got a rivalry somewhere there. You would hope it would be. But, you know, Oklahoma City is flimsy right now. I don't know what we see in the future for them. But we know that we saw this with Portland. We know that Portland looked like that next best team that's coming up. And now they're starting to get some playoff experience, age around them. And now we're going to see them. They're going to be a tough out.
Yeah, and one thing I on the other side, looking at OK City, what was promising about them, because I've been saying this all the time, that you got to push Russ to the two guard. And you got to find a point guard who's not afraid to be aggressive. And I would say Schroeder was the closest in a while to someone who was comfortable in his spot being point guard. And when they really let him kind of play and assert himself, they played better. And he's like that third wheel, but they still got a lot of tension between that because it requires, even though Russ has given up a lot to allow PG to like excel this year, there's still that other piece. When it came down to it, Russ took a shot percentage-wise, wasn't good. He wasn't shooting that well. And so that was a shot that PG probably should have taken, or even if Schroeder should have taken, he could have been the playmaker. And so there's some issues here. When you think about what this means for OK City, Darnell, or, you know, what does this mean for Russ, the narrative around Russ? What was your thought process watching the way that they fell out in the series?
What was my well, first of all, I wanted the series to be to go longer because personally I love this matchup. But as a person, I was rooting for OKC because I want the series to go longer. This game was a very frustrating game to watch because OKC. First of all, I gotta give respect to Damian Lillard. He balled out. Him and his world partner, the ankle bully, Joe McCollum. But OKC, man, I don't know if it's the players on the court or if it's the coach, but they seem to have made some very questionable decisions coming down the stretch because, like I said earlier, 3 minutes left, you're up by 8-9 points.
Yeah.
You got to drain the clock. You got to work deep into the shot clock and then attack. Like, if I was running the team, we're not, I'm going to have PG in the high post. That's where he was cooking the whole first half, the whole game pretty much. He had like 30, I think. You give him the ball in the high post. We're not attacking until there's 6 to 8 seconds left. And he gets a quick move off. If they double, he kicks it. Open shot.
Well, I think one of the issues was like he was like 1 for 4 down the stretch on free throw. So yeah, you want that, but then if he gets fouls, he's got to convert.
That's the next one.
The problem is you're gonna get the double team. Like it's hard to double from the middle of the floor. So I think you got it right. Yeah. The problem is they're gonna let Russ shoot because Russ shooting like 25% from anywhere outside. So that's they said he took 100 attempts in the last 3 games.
Yeah, but
that's entirely too many shots.
But the next part is you got to Paul George. He made 3 straight free throws. So one trip, I think it was 2.5 minutes left in the game, 3 minutes left in the game. Back-to-back possessions. He comes down and gets fouled, misses both free throws. Next possession comes down, dribbles into 2 people, turns the ball over early in the shot clock. That's the killer. I knew the game was over as soon as that happened.
Yeah, I mean, it happened, like they came back. And when you watch so this is back to what Hank and I were talking about Portland, is what makes Damian such a great player, and people have been talking about this, is he doesn't get caught in the emotional turmoil of the playoffs. The other thing is he's figured out that it's not about him. That's crazy to say by a guy who scored 50, but he knows when he should take a step back. He knows, because you got to think about it, Harold played well. Like a number of those guys, those role players, contribute.
I said Al-Farouq Aminu, he hit Grant with a dream shake yesterday.
Yeah. I mean, you got a number of those guys who come off the bench. You got Curry. And so he – like, the best part of his game was what the game before, the 2 games before, where he struggled early on, but he kind of allowed for the other team and allowed for his game to come. Yeah. You don't see that level of maturity happen over in Oklahoma City.
That's the like, best.
Right. And part of it is I love Russell Westbrook, but it's hard to be around a guy who is always mostly up and down. Like, if you've ever been in a locker room or in a team situation like that, the stress around the situation is much higher. If you watch Dame Leonard, everybody else is just cool like him. In a pressure moment, he and McCallum, you look at the emotions of that team, their emotions are always here. Whereas, like, Oklahoma City goes up and down, and even as a coach, that's hard to manage. Like, and the thing that makes Russ great is what cost him in moments like this. He's like a crash and burn. Like, he had a triple-double last night. Amazing performance. hustles. Like, there's nothing negative. You could talk about his shot selection and everything else, but it's not because he doesn't play hard. Like, there's a lot of cats who just don't play hard. And so it's hard to counter him, but he's got to figure out his tempo, his emotions. He got to figure out some way to allow space for other people. Because if you really want to think about it, the person who probably had the ball in his hands down the stretch should have been Schroeder. Why? Because he's a natural point guard. He's a guy who's going to look to see the clock and make the right decisions. He really should have managed the end of the game. And they're not at that point to allow him to manage the end of the game. To be truthful, he can shoot free throws. He's a legitimate point guard. He can get you the shots where you want to get it. But I don't think they're mature enough to recognize that he's the one who should have the ball in his hands down the stretch. And maybe next year they will realize that. He's kind of growing that role. And it sounds like they try to encourage him to do that. But in that situation, they would have won the game if the ball would have been in his hands 6 out of the last 7 possessions. They would have got the shot they were supposed to get. And yeah. I think they're not – whereas Portland's comfortable with that. They know those situations now, right? And they got a superstar who's ready to deliver. So that's the part that I don't know where they go from here. I don't know where Oklahoma City goes from here.
Exactly. That's the way I feel. I'm speechless. It's like, because it's like you have to ask yourself, okay, you got a player that's as dynamic as a Russell Westbrook, triple double, like on a night like that.
Yep.
But Paul George to me seemed like he disappeared a little bit down the stretch. Yeah. And quite frankly, rather disappointing down the stretch of that game, okay? And so, you know, what do you do if you're them, all right? And it seems like that's the stopgap for teams or for players to go somewhere else and be great, you know, and they're leaving Russell there by himself trying to do all he can to hold it together. So, but when you look on the other hand, you got a Portland team that, you know, that can make some moves in the offseason and get over the hump. With a budding superstar in Damian Lillard. And I'll tell you this, if don't nobody think that young man was a superstar before last night, they know now.
They know now. They know now. Dame Dollar put the dagger.